College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Offman Show. We're on the team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too at the team 980. Just a few minutes, you'll hear from Mayor Bowser. She was on with Kevin Sheehan earlier in the week, today, yesterday, whatever day it was, talking about the stadium, the RFK deal, the latest. So get that. Glenn Kino, documentary filmmaker, later this hour as well. He produced an award-winning documentary called Hoops, Hopes, and Dreams that I got a chance to see through the DC Docs Film Festival that was in town a couple weeks ago. Glenn and I have been running circles around each other ever since, and we finally got a chance to chat today. So that's coming up at 5:30. We're hoping to catch Sonia Citron, Mystics star rookie, coming up at 6 o'clock. Kendra Andrews, ESPN, at 6:30. But right now, news of the day. I guess this is technically not my beat, but we don't have a guest, so I'm not going to play the sounder. So the Commanders put out a teaser on Instagram and their other social media platforms today saying new uniforms, and been told that that is the alternates are coming. They are coming a week from today, so it's July 2nd. They will come on July 9th. And of course, there's been a lot of speculation about what they're going to be. Are they old? There's kind of been, you know, talk, and Sheehan has been the guy on this because Kevin loves this stuff, as many of the older fans do. And I'll talk about that in a second as well. But it's going to be like the old colors, and it's going to look something, you know, the alternates are not going to be these black uniforms that maybe are kind of cool and obviously now have a different cachet because that's the ones they were wearing for the Hail Mary. But are going to be a throwback. And a lot of people were like, well, does this mean the logo? Does this mean, like, how throwbacky are we getting? Or is this just the old burgundy and the old gold? And what we got today was a hint that it's probably just going to be the colors. Because in the teaser photo, there is a W on the helmet. And I can reliably, I think, say that was an intentional choice, right? They could have released, if they wanted to stoke the flames for the week, they could have released a silhouette of nothing, just a full blackout. Alternates are coming, right? They didn't do that. They intentionally shaded out and got darker as it went down, revealing the W in silhouette form. So it's a black. There's no coloring to it. There's no hint of coloring to it. The new W logo that has become the actual team logo for the Commanders on the helmets. And I know there's some people that are going to be upset, but Ben, we were talking about this before the show, and I think it's important to say, like, fans over 40, and especially fans over 50, care about the old logo a lot. And look, I'm going to put out of this conversation anybody who is trying to have a political fight, and this is a vehicle for it. I'm not talking about the bad actors, okay? I'm talking purely from, like, true fans of the team who, if you are a fan who is above 40 and especially above 50, you have really fond memories of watching this team on TV or going to RFK Stadium, and the stadium was shaking and the team was wearing a certain uniform, and that look, that uniform, that logo, that color scheme, that everything has a real nostalgia to it of good feelings. If you are 40 years old or younger, especially if you're 35 or younger, you don't have any of that. And Ben, as someone who grew up here, who's 23 years old?
21.
You're 20. How? Damn, you graduated college early.
I'm just on the young side for my grade. My birthday's in August.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So almost 22. I don't know about you, but Ben's almost 22. That was a tight end you significant other reference. There's another. That was like a joke inside of a joke. It was a Russian nesting doll of cultural pop culture references.
That was good.
The point is, when you see that logo, is your first thought joy or pain?
Well, it's pain from a standpoint where I never saw the team be anything more than a dumpster fire than when they had that logo in my lifetime outside of really two seasons. But of course, 2012, I know a lot of people my age love to reminisce on 2012. It makes me angry thinking about 2012.
Right.
Because what happened after that and the situation that RG me put us into. So that's why, like, I don't look favorably on a year like that. Everyone's like, oh, man, I always think back to 2012, how special it was. I don't care about 2012. What did they do after that?
It was awesome in the moment.
They did nothing after that.
It was really, really bad. And then 2015 happened. They win a division kind of early, and then they botched the Cousins thing 7 ways from Sunday on the contract. Like, that insignia, that logo, was a sign of incompetence. And I think this is the hard part for people who are older than me to understand, right? I sit right on the line at 35, and I realize that I did not grow up here. But, like, if your entire life, that logo has been associated with mostly bumbling idiocy, and that bumbling idiocy is mostly about Daniel M. Snyder and him ruining the franchise, you don't have that off, like, your first impression is that. And for those of you that are older, and many of you, you're like, quit yelling at me. I understand. Like, I'm not an idiot. But, like, and I'm not, I don't know. I'm not trying to preach, but, like, if you don't have the first impression of the great memories that you had at RFK, and all you have is Snyder ruining that, and that's your first impression, that logo doesn't do anything for you. And so the farther removed we get from it, and especially now that I think more people associate this W, I realize that a lot of folks associate that with Snyder. I don't. Like, he was already kind of, to me, on the way out. Like, I think, when I think of Commanders, I now think of Jaden Daniels. I think of Josh Harris. I think of the new. And so I'm all for honoring the team's history and for guys like Doc and B. Mitch and obviously Mark Rippon and all these guys that wore those old uniforms to see Joe Theismann, to see these alternate uniforms and be like, that's still my team. That's still my franchise. And I'm all for that. It's just that the W, probably shaded in the old burgundy and gold, which would be kind of cool to see. I think that's the proper logo to put on the helmet.
You know what I think about the block W?
What?
Obviously, what does the W stand for? Win. And now that the team is starting to win, that was the most fun I had in my entire young life being a fan. I could feel proud to don the logo. I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, you literally have a Commander shirt on right now.
I'll tell you one thing. I don't love the block W. I think it's a pretty generic, weak-looking logo. I wish there was some more creativity to it. However, I don't give a damn what the logo is if they win 12 games a year. And I know, for some reason, that's not a concept that everybody can get behind. But that's just how I feel. And I think most people who are true fanatics, as you and I put it before the show, that's what we care about.
Yeah, so, people are irrational about it because fan is short for fanatic. And I get, like, sports should be a visceral, emotional experience. And, like, I can talk all the logic I want, and some people are going to feel how they feel because those feelings are that. Like, they are feelings. They are not rational. And that's fine. I'm not telling you how to feel. I'm telling you how I feel and how I think a lot of other people my age and younger feel. And I think this is a very nice, I genuinely think this is a nice job by the organization, assuming that what we think is coming, to both honor the past while also not bringing the organization backwards into stuff that it's correct to just at this point move on from.
Can I admit something to you really quick?
Sure.
So before the new era was ushered in here with Adam Peters, Jaden Daniels in a legit winning organization came into fruition, I was almost the proponent that maybe with new ownership, you just go a whole new direction. You completely change everything. You change the color scheme. You completely move away from the past, which is in the far, far past. But now that the organization has essentially revitalized itself, it's starting to win in the burgundy and gold again. I think obviously you stick with that, and now you're finding a way to mix in some of the old with the new without going back to the old.
And I think had Jaden and Adam and Dan not found the success this early, like if they struggled the first 5 years of Josh Harris's ownership, they were competent, but like they didn't have lightning in a bottle and didn't seem like they were set to be contenders for a while. I think there's a chance that some version of that would have happened. They would have rebranded. I think they feel like the brand is strong enough that enough people will be like, oh, Commanders, you mean Jaden Daniels? That they're going to, that's why they eventually came out last year.
Commander tag.
Yeah, we're not. Yeah, they made it into something.
It's like a real thing. The organization has bought into the idea of Commander.
And if that had not worked, it would have been a lot easier to move off of it. But it did, and now it means something, and that's how you build a brand, not because you pick a good name, even though, as I've said a million times, Commanders is because you can't really shorten it and all that kind of stuff. The Mandos. It's not particularly good. All right, when we get back, latest on RFK, straight from Mayor Bowser, who talked to Kevin Sheehan earlier this week.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Offman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well, on the free Odyssey app, as well as now on iHeartRadio and TuneIn Radio. Our podcast available, of course, wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, which is where you can listen to Kevin Sheehan's interview, the Kevin Sheehan Show version of the podcast. Of course, I can't listen to Kevin Sheehan's interviews on our podcast feed. That would be weird. But on Sheehan's, which you can get in all the same places, you can check out his interview with Mayor Bowser about the latest on RFK Stadium, the most important bites of which we will play for you now. And the big question is, like, kind of where are we standing? And the highlight that you may have seen from this interview on social media, et cetera, is, hey, how concerned are you? And Mayor Bowser going out of five, and she goes four. And the question is kind of why. Like, everyone thinks this deal is going to get done, so what's at risk here? And that was where this interview started with Sheehan and Bowser, is like, what's the window of opportunity that we're looking at here? What is actually closing, and why are you so adamant this deal has to be done by July 15th, less than 2 weeks from now?
Well, this is how I live my life, Kevin, and it has been borne out in many, many experiences, is that sometimes in life, windows of opportunity open. And those people and those organizations who are successful figure out a way to get through the window, because you never know when it's going to close. You never know how fast it's going to close. In this case, I negotiated an exclusive agreement that runs through July 15th after many months of negotiation. And after kind of our own Hail Mary late December of last year, where we got the site in D.C.'s control after decades and decades of being under the control of the National Park Service. So we've done a lot of work. We have the right partner, and the time is now.
So that's Mayor Bowser earlier today on that front. And if you need a refresher, the deal is currently with D.C. City Council. They have to approve it, and there are things that they don't like in it. So what is taking so long, and like, what does City Council want to change? That was another question to Mayor Bowser.
Well, they won't tell me. I mean, literally, they won't tell me. So I think they gave more to the Washington Post last week than they've told me or the team. And so that's what I'm talking about when I say, let's all get in a room, hammer it out, and come up with if there are terms that make sense. Now, I will say, like, we didn't leave a lot. We didn't. I don't think we left anything on the table. Like, we negotiated hard. We got $2.7 billion, a roofed stadium that's going to generate tons of economic activity. So I think we've always expected that the council members would negotiate a community benefits package. With having spoken to the community and focused on getting D.C. residents employed, having small businesses have opportunities on the site, focus on youth sports. By the way, our deal includes building an indoor sportsplex
right.
that would be for D.C. And so I think that it's always been contemplated that that community benefits package would be negotiated at the council, at the council's process. And I'm looking forward to that being delivered at the same time.
So I think it's worth saying in defense of the council, and again, I'm not here to defend either side. I'm just here to try to present as much information as possible and contextualize some of these things that the people involved are saying. The question is, like, what's taking so long and what do they want changed? The council's response would be, we haven't been working at it that long and we still don't even have the full thing. Like, we haven't had a chance to read it. These deals are not little, like, one sheet pamphlets. These are, you know, probably 100 or 1,000 page documents where every detail is critical. Like, some detail miss could mean $100 million is spent unnecessarily or against the will of the council. Had they seen, like, there are experts that have to go through this stuff and it takes time. And what Mayor Bowser did, intentionally or unintentionally, I'm not going to ascribe whether this was, like, politically conniving or politically genius or politically reckless. Like, I'm not going to ascribe intention to it. But because she presented them on the timeline that she did, where she was like, okay, here's my budget months late, and this is a part of it. And the council was like, all right, we have to get the budget done. We're going to pull this deal out of it and be able to look at it deeper. They actually, it's not like it's the only thing they have to do. And thus, they haven't actually had a lot of time to go through it and see if they agree with her. Because they might get to the end of this deal and be like, eh, we don't love that, we don't love that, but can we make these small tweaks? Okay, let's get it done. You guys, hey, Mayor Bowser, you did a great job of bargaining hard. Good work on behalf of the city. They also might not. But, like, you can't know what you don't know. And it takes time to know things. And thus, I think it's a little, like, the premise of the question gives into Mayor Bowser's side of the story. And whether she's right or not, I don't know. But I do know the council is would say they disagree with that premise. Last but not least, like, what's your like actual concern here? When the rubber meets the road, do you think the Commanders will re-engage with the state of Maryland? Or are you confident that this thing is going to get done and they'll figure something out?
The negotiation exclusivity runs through July 15th. Is that correct?
Yes.
Are you concerned that post July 15th, the team will negotiate with, say, Maryland, as an example?
Listen, I think the team wants to be at RFK. We want them to be at RFK, but they do business. They don't do politics. And so I think that we have an agreement. I stand by our agreement, and we both stand side by side in our willingness to answer all the council's questions and get to a yes this summer. And that's important. Now, I've been around this long enough to know, and you know what we went through last year with our sports teams. And so that's why having a period of exclusivity was, like, I insisted that that be a part of the term sheet. That's why I protected so vigorously, because I was that other jurisdiction. Okay. I was that other jurisdiction when I see a deal that wasn't solid. Our deal is solid. We have a signed term sheet. That wasn't the case in the Virginia deal, but I know how this can go, and so I think we all need to treat that that period of exclusivity with the seriousness that it deserves.
I think that is the right approach to what she said at the end, to say we should approach it as such. We should be aware, but she also didn't say no. She didn't say, yeah, I think they're going to go back to Maryland, because I don't think they will. I think what we're talking about is getting this done on the timeline they want. And the question that I still don't have an answer to is, do they want it because they want it, or do they want it because they need it to get construction done by the time they want to get open in 2030 and to realistically put in a bid for the 2031 Women's World Cup? Speaking of, the U.S. Women's National Team takes on Canada tonight at Audi Field. We'll touch on that a little bit later. But up next, Glenn Kino, who is a film director, directed one of my favorite short films I've watched in a long time, about Martin Luther King Jr., the basketball player. Yeah. Great chat with Glenn next on the Team 980.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app and streaming on YouTube too at the Team 980. Don't forget, we're also streaming now on iHeartRadio and TuneIn. But right now, it is our pleasure to welcome in Glenn Kino, who is a director, and he directed an absolutely beautiful short film called Hoops, Hopes, and Dreams. And it chronicles how basketball played an integral role in perhaps the two most significant African-American figures' lives of the last century in America, Martin Luther King Jr. and Barack Obama, starting with the story of Martin Luther King Jr. And that's where I want to start with you, Glenn. First of all, thanks so much for doing this. Thanks for making this film, and welcome to the show.
Of course. Thank you for having me. Yeah, it was a pleasure and an amazing opportunity to make this project. So.
The way you did it was so cool. The way it was shot, the art, like the cartoon type style art that's in. I love the way you told the story, but there has to be a story to tell. When did the story of Martin Luther King Jr., the Hooper, kind of come across your desk?
So funny enough, so by trade, I'm a visual artist, and I have been working for years with the athlete Tommy Smith, who you might know in 1968, raised his hand mm-hmm. and salute in the Olympic Games. And Tommy and I have had shows at multiple museums, and we actually made a film together called Withdrawn Arms. It's a really exciting journey, and we got to meet President Obama with Tommy and Colin Kaepernick, a bunch of people. And you know, my studio, my team, and myself, like when I engage a project, it's sort of like a deep immersion, holistic 360 sort of like collaboration, you know. And so one of the things that we did with Tommy, besides, you know, fulfill a lot of his goals and that had been fulfilled, was we helped start his foundation called the Tommy Smith Youth Initiative. And every year, Tommy and the team gives an award to an honoree, you know, at a celebratory dinner. And the foundation's great. They you know, give grants to young athletes and scholars. And a few years back, the grantee was, or the honoree was Ambassador Andrew Young, you know? And so I'm always at the gala. I sit in the corner, I'm in the back. I'm like Asian dude in the back of the corner eating my food. And I've done multiple interviews like you have with people, with Tommy. But funnily enough, whenever a politician is in conversation with Tommy, with people in front, somehow they feel compelled to talk about how great of an athlete they were, you know, even though Tommy has multiple world records. And so
right.
Andrew Young's no exception. So I'm sitting there eating the food. Andrew gets the award. He's holding a little sculpture that I make. And he says, Tommy, did I ever tell you the time that Dr. King and I played basketball? And I just dropped my fork. I was like, oh my God, what is this story? It's incredible. I leaped over tables, because Andrew Young was sort of in and out, and they were wheeling him out, you know, on his wheelchair to expedite his leaving. And I jumped in front of his chair, ambushed him on the way to the car, and I said, you know, Ambassador Young, my name's Glenn Kino. You're holding an award that I made in your hand. I'm a collaborator with Tommy, and I would love to tell that story if I can in film. And he said, I love Tommy. I love basketball. Yeah, let's do it. You know, and so he right then he said, let's go. Let's tell the story. And we had not yet heard that, you know, before. There were small references in his book and, you know, on a podcast, he had one mentioned, like, you know, 15 years ago, 12 years ago. And so we were excited to get the story. And you know, right then I'd called my producing partner, a fellow named Michael Latt, who was unfortunately killed in the process of making this film. But his mantra was lead with love. And you know, Michael and I started working on the project, and it's been a gift every day. So.
Man, that's an awesome story. I can now imagine having seen the film, like the cartoon, if you will. And I say in cartoon, is there a better term that I should
animation? Animation.
Yeah. Sometimes my brain doesn't really work great with the words. I talk for 3 hours a day, Glenn. I don't know why they gave me a show. But yeah, the animation, I can imagine you just jumping over the table in the animation now.
Oh my God.
We need that. First of all, second of all, I happen to be reading a book, that I literally just finished last night called How Basketball Can Save the World. I don't know if you're familiar with it. But it highlights a lot of different things about basketball and its place in culture. And it often goes back to James Naismith and why he created the game and kind of the soul of basketball. And I thought about that book, obviously, because I was reading it as I'm watching the film, and this initial game and a lot of the initial work that Ambassador Andrew Young does with Martin Luther King as they're bringing people together to play basketball, and even King's initial recruitment of Young happens in a YMCA, which is, of course, where James Naismith created the game. And I'm curious if that kind of lineage came up at all, kind of this root core of what basketball meant, the YMCA-ness of it all, and how that kind of greater mission of basketball, of why James Naismith even started the game, how that is a through line in this story.
Yeah, no, I would say, you know, just to be you know, super, you know, sort of, I guess, candid about the story. And Andrew Young didn't. So I don't believe he met Dr. King in the gym. I think that that's the first time they played basketball was in the Y together.
Right.
You know, clearly knew each other. But I think that, you know, the reason why this is for us an important story and but for the world has been an ignored story, you know, is because it hasn't been something that sort of, you know, as a story risen to the occasion of sort of how we want to or assume to view our leaders. You know, no one thinks of them. Like, oh, these guys can play basketball, they can hoop, you know? And I saw that and saw a creative opportunity to you know, tell a story that not only, you know, as I've been saying, brings our leaders and heroes down to our level, but paints a pathway for us to aspire to be at their level. You know, they're just like us in both directions, you know? And I think that, you know, particularly when Andrew and Dr. King were playing ball, you know, it was an explicit effort to stop nonviolence. And what Andrew was saying in the film is that, you know, particularly young men and youth culture, you know, it's very easy to want to be violent and to be angry, you know, and a way to, you know, connect with people to diffuse situations in a nonviolent way, you know, what was them playing basketball with them, you know, which was great. And I think a utility born out of basketball. And then, you know, Jemele Hill is such a great orator and so wise, and for her to piece through the connectivity between the way you play sports, you know, as sort of like a leadership tell, you know, I think those are all very important, you know, characteristics. But you know, so I don't want to overplay the story, but I will say from a poetic and a sort of connectivity, and in this moment right now that we're in, where, you know, it's so divisive, and it's divisive, you know, in a lot of ways because we have preconceived ideas of who these people are that we're fighting for, fighting against, you know. And I think what we're trying to, you know, hope to put forth is the idea, you know, that there is a lot more humanity and interesting middle ground and mix, you know, and you know, sometimes, you know, being teammates is a good thing.
For sure. And there's a great quote in the doc, how you play sports is a character reveal.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is so, so, so true. Glenn Kino, director of Hoops, Hopes, and Dreams with us. Again, it's been showing at a bunch of film festivals, debuted at Sundance, but was at the DC Docs Film Festival a couple weeks ago here in the district. And it's an awesome film. He's with us on the Hoffman Show. One of the other folks that you talked to for this film was Jerry West. And just based off the timeline of making it, this had to be one of the last interviews that he did, as we lost the legend. I believe it was last year, if not earlier this year. So what, I just very simply, like, what was it like to get to talk to Jerry West about basketball?
Yeah, in fact, I believe that we're the last interview. that Jerry ever participated in. And I have done we're so grateful to the Clippers organization for helping us. You know, Chris Wallace, Gillian Zucker, and the whole team there, Steve Ballmer. I have actually created the monument in front of the new Intuit Dome.
Wow.
And so I've been working with the Clippers for a while. They you know, gratefully and thankfully sort of, you know, facilitated that interview. I mean, talk about dream come true interviews, and, you know, someone who I grew up, looking up to and thinking about, and, you know, complicated histories, you know, watching, you know, documentaries and, you know, scripted shows about the Lakers and about Jerry and whatnot. But I it was really great to hear him talk, and really he was so passionate about, you know, the sport of basketball and the ability for it to be a unification, you know, sort of, you know, tool, you know, and the idea of how, you know, connecting with his teammates and, you know, how everything he learned in life, he learned from basketball, particularly in terms of, you know, you know, social and cultural relations, you know, and he painted a really, you know, great picture for us that we put in the film. But, you know, I we were with him for hours, you know, talking about a bunch of different things. So, yeah.
Beyond the obvious of, like, basketball is the thing that they did abnormally well for you by making this film that is inherently about, like, who they were as basketball players and how it shaped them as people.
Oh, I think it was not surprising to hear the stories that both of them had a very unique self-confidence that rose to the level of leadership in that their peers, you know, look up to them, you know, as, you know, the leaders on the court and, you know, in life, you know. And so, you know, the idea that, you know, for in President Obama's case, you know, not just Reggie and Michael Strautmanis, but the entire nation, you know, sort of, you know, galvanized to, you know, kind of figure out, like, what's the next play. And in the same capacity, Dr. King, you know, that you know, as they expressed themselves on the court, they had a vision, you know, and they had the appropriate team, and, you know, and as Reggie said, you know, sort of, you know, made the right play. I think that, you know, it's also remarkable that they were actually good and right. weren't just obvious. And it was the funny in the film when for the Ambassador Young interview, you know, again, we had him for several hours. You know, at one point I said, were you guys any good? and that's when he responded with, you know, hey, Glenn, when we're doing God's work, we can hit it from everywhere on the court. You know, I think the bit we cut out is he was probably listing names and talking about Steph and other people, but, you know, pretty much he was saying that you know, they were not good, but when they were doing God's work, they got good, which was really funny. And that's something I'm not unfamiliar with, because, you know, for Tommy Smith, when he won the 200 men's, you know, the last 25 meters of that race, you know, is spiritual. You know, if you look at that race, he was behind, he had an injured groin, and somehow, because his intention was to do the right thing, you know, God, the world conspired. And I didn't even grow up as a religious person, you know, watching that film, be like, I don't know, it looks like someone put an invisible string on Tommy's waist and pulls him across the finish line, you know, right. And you got to think, like, when, you know, if Dr. King and Ambassador Young show up at a court asking for who's next, trying to defuse a situation that could possibly be explosive at any of the moments, you know, I know that specifically for the film, they were talking about, you know, a very chaotic moment up in the sort of New England area, you know. So they drove up from the south and up north, and, you know, these guys walk into an explosive environment trying to figure out how to defuse the situation. You know, if they can't make their shots and are discredited, you know, maybe the kids don't listen and maybe it doesn't work, you know. And so I think it's remarkable in all these cases that the teams are actually good.
Yeah, no, the respect of, like, I don't know, he's pretty good. Like, maybe we should listen to him. Like, anyone who's played, that's a real thing. I don't know whether that's a good thing, but it's definitely a real thing. And it certainly did a lot of good in that realm. Glenn Kino with us. Again, the film is Hoops, Hopes, and Dreams. the filmmaking question for you. Then I got yes. two more. One about Chris Middleton, as he's now one of the members of the Washington Wizards here. And I want to then just end on a bigger thought. But just from how did you guys functionally do that to put all this amazing archival footage where it's airing on a backboard?
As an artistic, as an artistic choice, you know, and you know, alongside making the film, as I mentioned, I was in the process of building the monument for the new Intuit Dome, and the sculpture there, and you can look at it later if you Google it, and super stoked. There's a little mini 3D version on Google Maps if you go there too. But it is
really cool.
It's a 50 foot long clipper ship. But all the sails are made from backboards that I have were inspired from backboards I've seen around the world, you know. And what I wanted to do is I want to build a metaphor of a gesture of like progress with you know cultural progress and unity. Sort of, you know, the basketball is the wind behind the sails of that. And so it's this beautiful. So I had all these mock-ups in the studio. I have a pretty decently big studio in LA, and I had all these, you know, basketball backboards in the studio, and you know, as an artistic gesture, whenever I make a film or any type of project, I don't want to do it the same way everyone else has done it before, you know, and wanted to make it compelling and but also have meaning. And so the idea of like projecting, you know, some of the archival footage, a very powerful moment, projecting it onto the basketball backboards, you know, really resonated, I think, with the concept that we were trying to put forth in terms of the you know, the mixing of the two to imply a bigger moment. So
Chris Middleton's name for who he is and just the character of him. And obviously he's had a great career. What was Chris's involvement in the film and what was it like to partner with him?
Chris and his sister Brittany were early supporters. You know, I mean, when we had the idea, we had shot Ambassador Andrew Young, you know, again, my sort of good friend and producer, so I get a little emotional, Michael Latt, sort of connected us, you know, via some other teams to Chris and Brittany, and you know, they were the first people to say, let's go make it. You know, and jump in and you know, sort of invest and sort of open doors for us and validate the project from a current player. You know, Chris was one of my favorite players in the league, you know, before. And so, you know, imagine getting a text message that you jump on a call with, you know, Brittany and, you know, get that family support, you know, meant a lot. And so it was just really, really great. And, you know, early support like they gave to the project, you know, are so meaningful, because when you're an artist and a filmmaker, have an idea, you think you have a story, you know, you got to convince people that it's going to be good. You got to convince people that's an important story. You know, those first few people that come in, you know, to help, you know, make the difference, all the difference in the world. And I'd say, you know, Brittany and Chris were the first. So
that's awesome. And then last but not least, this is on some level a question for you about what I do and what we do. I try not to be this person, but the discourse around basketball right now, the way it's talked about on the talking head TV morning shows and sports radio shows, et cetera, and whether that's the NBA, especially the kind of divisive nature that the WNBA is often talked about, it seems to run counter to what basketball is at its best, which is a sport that unifies. And that, like, how do you make sense of that dissonance between what basketball clearly means to you based off this film, what it can do as seen in this film, and the way that folks in the media, again, I try not to do it, but I'm not going to exempt myself, but us in the media talk about the sport, especially at the professional level?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I'll answer in two ways. One is, as a young, short-ish Asian American person, I'm 5'9". I'm not the shortest Asian that I know, but I'm not the tallest. You know, I played basketball growing up. You know, my whole life, sort of in the Asian leagues and whatnot. You know, playing the sport's different than watching the sport, first of all. You know, and being around the sport, I think that you know what I believe is happening, you know, in sports media. Which is understandable, you know, is that there, you know, a sporting event, all sporting events, all cultural events right now, are just source material for storylines, right? And I remember years ago, will remain unnamed, gossip tabloid media journalist came to my studio with some friends, and he explained how their tabloid gossipy brand was going to be built. And he said they're going to take soap opera narratives and they're going to go look at real life. They're going to find couples, people that, you know, cultural events that kind of approximate those situations. And they're just going to apply them to novella stories, to General Hospital, to every type of story, because the American public, you know, has a yearning for this storytelling. And if not going to happen by actors, it'll happen in real life. And then, you know, things like Brangelina show up, you know. And I think that we're now at the point where, you know, media and stories drive, you know, short form, you know, social media, they drive YouTube views. And so I think that there's a yearning to apply, you know, dramatic storytelling, you know, to some of these, you know, cultural events and the media does it, you know, and every sports media does it. But I think that's separate entirely, you know, as an entertainment device than the actual cultural impact of sports. You know, I think that the legions of young folks who play, you know, high school, you know, not high school, so play, you know, in school, they play through club, you know, and they watch it at that level. I hope to believe, and I still believe, that the love for the sport and the actual human effect of being on a team, you know, and being is an entirely different thing than what we see in sports media. I don't know if that makes any sense, but.
No, it makes a ton of sense. And it makes me even, I know this is probably not why you just said it, or you just pulled like some kind of cool mental ninja shit, a film like this even more. Cause like, it doesn't have to be that way. Like you could go tell a real, like what story is better than the one that you told? Like something that's made up and pulled from a telenovela, all due respect to the telenovela writers, or like this real life amazing story of how sport has helped change and shape the world for good. And so I just hope that our industry can do better. But I that answer is clarifying and I think really good and really insightful. Glenn Kino with us here on The Hoffman Show. Hoops, Hopes, and Dreams. Again, debuted at Sundance. It's won some awards recently as well. It was at the DC Docs Film Festival last month. And I got a chance to watch it. It was awesome. Glenn, thanks so much for making the film and for joining us here in DC on the radio.
Yeah, appreciate you. Thank you so much for having me.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.